across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Thank you, Don. Welcome to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, August 2nd. One more day from downtown Milwaukee, trading Lake Wissota for Lake Michigan. On this Wednesday, August 2nd, National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. Coming up this hour, the Wisconsin State Capitol was the scene Tuesday of the formal investiture of a new Supreme Court Justice, Janet Protasiewicz. Nearby, a former conservative Supreme Court candidate was proclaiming himself a victim for being ousted as head of the state court system now that progressives control the high court. We'll get into that topic and more of the happier points of the day later this hour with State Assembly Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire. We'll also visit with Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show. If you missed the last hour where we spoke about the Wisconsin connections to the new criminal indictment against former President Donald Trump, and also Congressman Mark Pocan's request for security camera footage from Congressman Derek Van Orden's recent late-night tirade in the Capitol Rotunda, well, you can catch that show anytime by going to civicmedia.us. That's the Civic Media website there where you can listen to all of our shows, and you can also listen to them as a podcast, as each hour of programming is turned into a different podcast episode. You can also subscribe through Apple, Spotify, all the other distribution platforms that are out there, and you can join us live 844-967-2789 or email us radio at upnorthnewswi.com. upnorthnewswi.com is our website where you can sign up for our morning newsletter. This morning's edition includes a bit of a preview of the Wisconsin State Fair, which gets going tomorrow just down the road from where I am here in West Allis, and all kinds of new food and award-winning food as well. I'm going to give a little cough here, so let me mute while I say good morning to Aaron.
Good morning, Pat. I'm glad that even though you might not feel like it 100% of the time, you are feeling a lot better.
He said, turning his mic back on. Yes, I do feel better despite the cough. I think of it as a the mass evacuation of the remaining mucus. It's like, okay, we're done. We're out of here. So feel better. The rest of it's getting out. And I really have a good prediction, a good feeling that tomorrow, being back in my own bed, back in my own home after 6 days on the road, is going to do wonders for my voice and for everything else. So my apologies for the sound quality and my gratitude for everybody's patience out there.
Yeah, I think right now you're in the moment in those Mucinex ads where all the big old germs just are like, I'm packing up, it's time to go. And they get in the car and drive away.
That's it, I'm out of here. Yeah, I definitely have the voice for that. So from up here on the 12th floor of this hotel downtown, I am looking out and I can look south and I can see 794. Which is this, bit of a freeway spur downtown. And I don't know if this, Aaron, has been talked about much on some of the other shows, but, you know, one of the big issues here is should 794, which is an elevated freeway and which was initially going to be part of a broader network that was never built. So should that be torn down and turned into more of a parkway or a boulevard? And I don't know if that gets talked about on some of the other shows. I wouldn't be surprised if it did.
Not the shows that I'm producing. I feel like Earl Ingram might talk about that.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did. And, as somebody who has lived in Milwaukee, albeit decades ago, and, knows these roads extremely well, I look at it and I completely understand the point of view of people like our friend Dan Schaefer from the recombobulation area, who has been a tireless advocate for reforming the freeway system here, which his particular one is the stadium freeway, which runs past American Family Field. Again, it was like a partial freeway that was built but never quite completed. And it is long past time. I completely agree with Dan on this one. It is long past time to scale that back into something more of a boulevard, and you'll get better development around American Family Field. You'll get better traffic flow than when it's a freeway and everybody's trying to speed up really quick, but then they have to slow down in pretty short order as it turns back into city streets. 794, I will admit, I'm not quite as sure about it. It feeds into the Hone Bridge. And for folks who never get to Milwaukee, you probably have seen the Hone Bridge. It's a rather iconic archway that spans where the rivers, the Milwaukee River and the Kinnickinnick flow into Lake Michigan. Anyway, I look at it and it's like, well, it seems like a pretty efficient way to get traffic through downtown. But there is example after example after example of how in recent years, communities have taken down their freeways, made them more like boulevards, and have actually enhanced the traffic flow and the usefulness of the land. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm very intrigued to see how this debate plays out, because it's not just Milwaukee. There are other communities as well. You know, Eau Claire for many, many years debated where its bypass should go for Highway 53. So I'm hoping for the best here because it's right near the Summerfest grounds and everything else about downtown. And you want all these communities to succeed. And just because decisions were made decades ago to make room for the automobile doesn't mean that they're the right decision for the way that we get from point A to point B today. So that's my little tip of the cap to Milwaukee as I hang out here for one more day. We'll have more headlines coming up, and then State Representative Jody Emerson will join us later this hour here up north.
Looking for someone who's never weak but always strong to protect you and defend you, whether you are right or wrong. Someone to open each and every door, but it ain't me, babe. No, 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 it ain't me, babe.
Here's Bob Dylan channeling the words of Donald Trump. It was on this day in 1962 that Robert Zimmerman dropped his name in favor of Bob Dylan, where he's been ever since. Jennifer Wojcicki is here from Weatherology to give us an update on the forecast all across the state for this middle of the week. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, it looks like we can expect to see highs getting into the mid to upper 80s today. Sunny skies for the southern part of the state, then a little bit more cloud cover with a chance for showers and storms developing in the afternoon for central and west central Wisconsin. A marginal risk for severe weather for those areas as well. So definitely something we'll keep you posted on throughout the day and evening hours. Mid to upper 80s primarily for Thursday, 90 around Richland Center. Sunny skies will start off the day for southern Wisconsin, then a slight chance for showers and storms developing in the afternoon hours. Chance for rain and storms throughout the day around Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids, then just a sunny day around Amory and Baldwin. Then back into the mid to low 80s, more average for this time of the year on Friday. Upper 70s, a little bit closer to Lake Michigan. Sunny skies for most, but some clouds moving in around Richland Center. And then it looks like at least a slight chance for some rain to start off the weekend on Saturday afternoon or the evening hours, with temperatures lingering around about 80, mid to upper 70 is expected for most on Sunday, with a chance for rain for all.
Very good, Jennifer. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. I'll try to be a better conversationalist when I get my voice back. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
All righty. Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology. And a reminder, you can get that Up North News daily newsletter at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Turning to sports, and then we'll get back to talking about how we get around in Wisconsin here. Bryce Durang and Joey Weimer each hit consecutive two-run singles as part of a four-run fourth inning as the Brewers defeated the Washington Nationals 6-4 last night to snap a four-game losing streak and come within a half game of Cincinnati for the top of the National League Central Division. The deciding game of the series is this afternoon at noon in the nation's capital. Wade Miley will be on the mound for the Brewers. And again, we are going to give away tickets tomorrow. Tomorrow, the Brewers return home for a weekend series against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And so tomorrow at around 6:50, we will give away four tickets to Saturday evening's game. And the rules here on Civic Media radio stations are that you cannot have won a prize in the calendar month. So everything kind of reset in terms of, you know, eligibility for prizes. And you also have to be able to use these tickets, and you have to be able to have them emailed to you. So having explained the rules, tune in for some really simple trivia. Be a caller tomorrow, and maybe you could be the one to win four tickets to a Milwaukee Brewers baseball game. All right, I think Mark from Prairie du Sac is on and wants to talk a bit about the traffic patterns, if you will, how we get all around Wisconsin. Mark, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, and it's kind of wonderful now because I grew up in far northern Wisconsin there, you know, Douglas County. You know, we'd go up there quite often to go hunting and that kind of thing, and it's just amazing how you just kind of buzz through everything where you just used to go through every little community up there on, like, Highway 53 especially.
Yeah.
That Cameron and Bloomer and Spooner and that, but it kind of strikes me that with the whole freeway thing, that how it kind of killed communities in some cases, where it kind of reminded me of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where it was the insane idea was to put the freeways in and get rid of public transportation in the form of the red car, which apparently the Republicans have taken to heart, and they just hate anything, you know, to do with like trolley cars or anything like that. That any kind of public transportation, that it just is something to really consider, because some of these freeways have just kind of decimated, you know, communities. And in that movie, of course, it was, you know, getting rid of Toontown and putting in the freeway and paving over Toontown and putting the freeway over it. And the other thought I had is with the recent indictments yesterday coming down on Donald Trump, I'm wondering how many of our Republicans in this state are sweating bullets right now because they were participating in the coup and went on to further it with, you know, Michael Gableman's investigation and Robin Voss, you know, furthering that, and, you know, up until very recently, and all the other, you know, cast of characters that were involved in the Wisconsin coup with the fake electors and Jim Troupas and Ron Johnson, you know, the bag man, and that it's time for all these guys to face the music. Just the damage they've done to our state, both in terms of infrastructure and to the infrastructure of our elections and trust in our elections.
Yeah, could not agree more. Mark, thanks so much. Have a great day. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Looking again at the fake electors scheme, you know, it began with a memorandum from Kenneth Cheeseborough, an attorney who was representing the Trump campaign at the time with some of its legal challenges. And he wrote this memo in mid-November of 2020 that advocated for Trump supporters in Wisconsin to meet and cast their votes for him. And it was supposed to be a just-in-case thing, in case lawsuits found that there were election irregularities and that Trump had actually won the state. But that's not what actually happened. The Trump people did not abide by the just-in-case scenario. So instead of these being backup ballots in case actual irregularities were found, they became fraudulent ballots designed to overturn an election. And two of those fraudulent ballots in Wisconsin and Michigan had been delivered to the office of Senator Ron Johnson, and a request came in to Senator Johnson's office to deliver these ballots to Vice President Mike Pence on the floor of Congress, a joint session on January 6th. But thankfully, Mike Pence and a top aide said, no, we don't want any part of that. But again, just shows you just how close we came to chaos for something that Ron Johnson continued to sow doubt about the election. You had Scott Fitzgerald, who helped arrange for the fake electors to meet in the Wisconsin State Capitol in December of 2020. And you had people like Tom Tiffany, who voted against the will of the voters, voting to object to the certification of legally cast ballots. And so you will hear a lot about Wisconsin as this criminal case against former President Trump moves forward. And it's going to take some time to do that, but that's sometimes how the wheels of justice turn. Not nearly as fast as some of us would like, but they are in fact turning. Speaking of Tom Tiffany, we kind of predicted, well, we didn't just kind of predict here. We said flat out, Tom Tiffany's not going to challenge Tammy Baldwin. And turned out we had that. Tom Tiffany announcing yesterday that making the grand announcement that he's going to run for re-election to the 7th Congressional District up north. when the actual story is Tom Tiffany is not going to challenge Tammy Baldwin for her Senate seat when she runs for a third term in 2024, adding his name to the growing list of Republicans who are not going to even try to take on the popular incumbent Democrat. They include Congressman Brian Steil and Congressman Mike Gallagher. And so now we may be left with essentially, you know, what could be a clown show on the other side, as folks in the Republican Party from the more extreme fringes, shall we say, get into the race, and without any kind of a quote unquote mainstream Republican, at least a leading candidate right now, it's quite possible that we'll have a campaign that is steeped in, you know, hyperbole and maybe even, you know, violent rhetoric, you know, defending Donald Trump and the January 6th insurrection. I hope not, but right now it does not look like we're going to have what you would call a traditional U.S. Senate race with a mainline Republican challenging this very mainline Democrat. Coming up in our next segment, we're going to talk to State Representative Jody Emerson about all of the pomp and circumstance and all of the ceremony and all the celebration about Janet Protasiewicz becoming Wisconsin's new Supreme Court justice. But before we get to that, we have to acknowledge that there was another news story, quote unquote, that was out there. I mean, it's a news story, but it was just the way that it was planted and framed that is, you know, unseemly, shall we say. And that is because Randy Koshnick, who'd been director of the state court system, had been notified by one of the progressive justices that now with progressives controlling the Wisconsin Supreme Court, he was going to lose his job. Who is Randy Koshnick? Well, he's somebody who ran against former state Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice then, Shirley Abramson, back in 2009. And he was then appointed by Scott Walker to other positions. He is somebody who, you know, may have run the state courts ably, but it is hardly out of the realm of reality that after elections, when control changes, that the new people in charge want to change some of their top lieutenants. We see this all the time in the presidential cabinet, for example, when I ask, why is it always Democrats and progressives who are pressured to retain or even appoint Republicans and conservatives to high positions? You know, President Obama, for a time, had three Republicans in his cabinet, whereas George W. Bush, zero Democrats in 8 years. So please spare us this notion that Randy Koshnick is somehow entitled to keep a job working for people he politically opposed over the years. This goes beyond the ability to do the job, and it gets into the ability to be trusted in doing your job. And frankly, I think that Mr. Koshnick should look at the bright side of this. He now has ample spare time to possibly consider another Supreme Court race. Maybe he will challenge Anne Walsh Bradley in 2025 and try to change the conservative and liberal makeup of the court once again. So don't look at it as elections have consequences. Look at it as a potential campaign opportunity. Vice President Kamala Harris is going to be in Wisconsin tomorrow, going to be here where I am right now in the southeastern part of the state, making a stop in Pleasant Prairie to tout broadband and affordable connectivity, then heading up to Milwaukee for some campaign receptions. The visit comes a little more than a month after the Biden administration announced that Wisconsin is going to get more than $1 billion in federal money to expand high-speed internet access. It's part of a plan to distribute $42 billion nationwide to provide reliable and affordable internet service for every home and business in the country by the year 2030. But bringing it back to Wisconsin for a second, Governor Tony Evers had planned to pair up the $1 billion in federal funds with about $750 million from the state because of the record budget surplus, so that everyone in Wisconsin could get better service faster. Republicans in the legislature cut that to zero. They cut out every dollar of the state commitment to help your community get better connections. When we come back, we'll get back to the investiture of new State Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz. We will be joined by Jody Emerson, state representative from Eau Claire. And then we'll wrap things up visiting with Todd Alba to find out what comes up on his afternoon show all across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow here in Milwaukee, but wherever you are across Wisconsin, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be back.
Oh, how I hate to get up in the morning. Oh, how I'd love to remain in bed. For the hardest blow of all is to hear the bugler call. You gotta get up, you gotta get up, you gotta get up this morning. Someday I'm going to murder the bugler.
I can't resist, Jody. I'm sorry. It's, you know,
my forever song, isn't it?
It, you know. I don't know that anybody has better walk-up music than you, because Jody, a dear friend, says, you know, she'll do favors for us now and then appearing on this radio show, but always under protest because of the really early hour for people like her who aren't by your own admission, not a morning person.
Not a morning person.
Yep. So you don't want to be one of the Republicans on a committee that tries to meet at like 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning. You're not gonna get Representative Emerson's better side. I take that back. Whenever you're actually on stage, you are, you know, you're there. You perform, you know.
I do my best for my constituents.
There you go.
Taste and smile or not. So.
So I wanted to, you know, talk with someone who had been at the swearing in ceremony in the Capitol Rotunda. It was a big moment. I mean, it's always a big moment when you get a new state Supreme Court justice, but bigger when, you know, ideological control seems to shift one way or the other. And so, you know, courts aren't supposed to be political. But unfortunately, this right-wing majority that we've had for 15 years has made it that way. And so we can't sugarcoat it, Jody, from a political standpoint. Yesterday was a pretty happy day for people on the left side of the political spectrum.
Well, for a couple of different reasons, too. You know, we won't get into the Trump indictment, but it was a good day yesterday. And, you know, just over the last few months, you know, I'm feeling a shift in Madison, too. There's a lot more excitement on the progressive side of the aisle. There's a lot more, I don't know if I should say fear or stress on the right side of the aisle. But yesterday was a great day. I love a swearing in. I love the peaceful passing of power and how we can honor different offices. And I think that's what it's about sometimes too, is, you know, honoring the fact that it's, you know, the highest court in our state got a new member. And it was packed yesterday, actually, to make room for all of the judges. Some of us elected officials from the state legislature were asked to, you know, leave our row and make room for more judges. So,
There was, they described the overflow crowd was hundreds of people who wanted to get in there.
So then I went and watched it, you know, from the back for a little while, and then went up to my office where I could get a better view on Wisconsin Eyes.
Yes, that's often how it works in these things. It's not just sports, it's politics as well. Exactly. You know, but in being there, I'm sure that a lot of the discussion was about not specific cases, although they are sure to come up, but more about the issues. And of course, the two big ones are fair maps and abortion rights. And so again, a lot of this is speculative. We're new into the term here, but what were people saying? What were people talking about, you know, whether we should expect anything in fairly short order on one of those topics or something else?
Yeah, well, we know that Josh Call already has that one case pending with the circuit court right now about abortion. And I'm sure that that's going to be making its way to the Supreme Court in its due time. You know, I think the possibilities are endless right now, whether it's about school vouchers, whether it's about fair maps, whether it's about whatever could come up in the future. You know, a few years ago, you would have never asked us if we would have had a case about, you know, keeping schools open or closed or businesses or whatever was, you know, happened with the courts because of the pandemic. What I'm excited about is the fact that Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty is not going to run our state anymore. There's very few cases that will ever lost before the conservative court. And so the fact that we're restoring integrity to the court, and we don't exactly know how the cases are going to go now. And I'm sure that there's going to be things that, you know, Judge Janet's going to rule on that I'm not going to agree with. I mean, there's things that Tony Evers does that I don't agree with. There's things that, you know, people in the assembly in my own caucus do that I don't agree with. So this isn't saying that we're going to get, you know, just our way every single time. But I think fairness and integrity is back on the court. And that's what's important about this. But it's nice to see the dawning of a new age right now. And it's, I don't even know how long it's been since we've had a progressive Supreme Court, but
no, I would say because prior to, you know, this current majority, things were seen much more through, you know, the prism of law rather than through the prism of politics. But now you have a court that, you know, for years has flaunted and weakened things like recusal rules, so that even though people associated with Will, the right-wing legal advocacy group, you know, people, attached to them, had donated tremendous sums in some of these state Supreme Court races. And yet many times these justices either didn't recuse themselves or at least had a, you know, 100% voting record to go along with Will. Such a coincidence.
It's almost as ethical as the U.S. Supreme Court sometimes.
Yeah, right, right. So I would imagine that there's going to be one of the things we don't talk about because it's more, you know, inside baseball, but I wouldn't be surprised to see this new majority take a look at the court's current ethics rules, recusal and otherwise, and probably hold themselves to a higher standard than the majority did.
I would hope so. And I hope that we can get something established, you know, that says if this happens, then this happens. And there could be something already like that written down. I'm not a court wonk. I don't know. I couldn't, you know, claim to know all of the ins and outs of everything that they do. But, you know, I love the little tagline that you've got there. It's a new day with Judge Janet.
It is.
Yeah. I get used to the new verbiage, Justice Janet. So.
Yeah, right. Now, look, along with the cases that could come up and what have you, when we get back to just democracy itself, again, this is a court, well, the previously conservative court, it came within one vote of overturning Joe Biden's narrow win in the presidential election. If Jill Karofsky hadn't beaten Dan Kelly earlier in 2020, we might have had something completely different here. And even since then, the whole notion that there are still two or three justices on this court that would go along with some of these things, some of these notions, is somewhat disturbing. And I guess while they are likely to be outvoted now, I guess we should still look for some very sharply worded dissents and arguments.
Well, there have been a few sharply worded arguments and dissents or things that have come out even recently. So the court is feeling a shift, and it's going to be some interesting language that we might see out of certain people coming up. So, yeah, I think everybody grab your popcorn. It's going to be an interesting time to be a Wisconsin Supreme Court fan and checking things out. So maybe we'll have to get a Wisconsin Supreme Court blog, like there's the SCOTUS blog, to follow along with everything. So.
Just might, you never know. You know, so we'll get to a couple of other capital matters here with Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire, who is joining us here on Up North News Radio. Let's start with the big one here, because there will be room on the calendar for a fall session of the legislature. Governor Evers, you know, made his partial vetoes. He invited Republicans to try again with, you know, a tax cut proposal, or maybe try funding things like, you know, child care counts. I don't know that there's a lot of indication that there will be movement, but maybe I'm wrong. Again, in terms of just based on conversations that you're having down there, where should somebody put the optimism needle on something? It doesn't even have to be big, but just something of substance being done in the fall where Republicans and Governor Tony Evers say, okay, we'll cooperate just a little bit more. You think there's any chance of that?
Well, you know, we are having some really good bipartisan movement. We had a great housing package that went through earlier this summer. And, you know, that was bipartisan. It was spearheaded by a Republican, but a lot of us came along. I was proud to be the lead Democratic author on that initiative that got $500 million. For us to be able to build workforce housing and remodel workforce housing around our state when we're in a housing crisis. So we're seeing some places what we are agreeing on things. I hope that there's more agreement because it is a new day in Wisconsin. I hope that I have some of my colleagues that reach across the aisle a little bit more and are willing to work with us. On the flip side, you know, we're also seeing even more doubling down on social issues, you know, whether it's the anti-trans legislation that came out earlier this summer, you know, in July, I was going to say earlier this month, but we're in August now. Sorry, mm-hmm. Yep. You know, caffeine hasn't kicked in yet, but, you know, there's horrible anti-trans legislation. We're seeing all kinds of hate around accepting our friends and neighbors for the people that they are. So
there's Nazis marching in Watertown, for goodness sakes, in Wisconsin, with and
legislators defending them too.
With legislators, yeah, giving, you know, some kind of a wink almost at what's going on, because, well, basically just equating the two and saying, well, you can be both against Nazis and against this, but to be against people for who they are, you know, exactly. in the LGBTQ community is especially disturbing. I mean, that trans, do we expect the anti-trans issue to be taken up in the fall?
Yeah, we're gearing up for that. There's already a bill about, you know, quote unquote, protecting girls in sports. Well, trans girls are girls too, and they deserve to be playing in sports. And whether it's at the K-12 level or the colleges and universities level, you know, WIAA and NCAA are not state run entities, and they can have their own rules in place. And it's a sad day when we can't let a 10-year-old play volleyball, or, you know, a 12-year-old play volleyball on their middle school sports team. So we're seeing, you know, hateful things like that, but hopefully we're going to come together on some other things. I think childcare counts is a huge thing. I've already seen a couple of childcare centers in my district close. So we need to, you know, do what we can to make sure that people can get to work. And part of that is making sure that we've got safe, adequate childcare around our state. And then there's, you know, other things that we've just got to take care of. Mm-hmm. The state. So hopefully we can come together a little bit and, you know, have some good conversations and work together, but, you know, ain't holding my breath, Pat.
No, that's a very fair point, is that we can, what I would like to see is Republicans looking at the political realities, at the, you know, the new maps, and saying, I might be in a much more competitive district next year, so maybe we back off the hate bills and we talk more about job creation and economic development, which you would get through something like, you know, making childcare more accessible and affordable. But as we've noted, there are some folks in the Republican caucus who are thinking practical in terms of job creation, and others are very much culture war warriors, and that may be an impediment to progress.
And I think, you know, when you camp out in the hate lane, I don't think you can get out of there either. So that's the other piece. That's one of the things that the bad maps have done, is we've allowed very fringe people to be an elected official, whether it is in the assembly and Congress, or, you know, a previous occupant of the White House, and the fringe ideas that they come up with really make it hard to work with them. So hopefully if we get some fair maps, it will at least have the fringe people out, because their districts aren't going to tolerate fringe ideas. And, you know, we can get to a more moderate body where we can work together on the big issues. We're always going to fight about certain things. But can we work together to make Wisconsin a better place? Can we have good education? Can we have good business climate? Can we have, you know, roads that work, bridges that aren't falling down, things like that?
Here's hoping. Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire, thank you so much for filling us in on yesterday's festivities and the potential for progress. We'll talk to you later.
Bye, Pat.
Have a great day. Coming up next, we'll talk to Todd Alba about his weekday afternoon show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back.
Seems like a month since I kissed my baby goodbye. I could have a lot of women, but I'm not like some other guy. I could find one to hold me tight, but I could never make believe it's right. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight.
Oh boy. Sixth day on the road. I cannot wait to get back to Lake Wissota later today after 5 nights in hotels. It is hotel coffee, Todd Alba. Not all it's cracked up to be.
No, it's that stuff can kill you if you're not careful. Are you on the road? Is it true that you're a roadie for Bon Iver, like preparing for the new tour?
No. It's not even close. I can't even imagine who I would be a roadie for, you know, maybe, yeah. Well, like Representative Emerson, there's people like that. I would roadie for them for, right. You know, for Katrina Shanklin or, you know, for Christina Shelton, you know, there's lots of great, if they were going on like a public speaking tour, I would be a roadie for Todd Alba.
Oh, would you really? Oh, that's so kind.
Oh God. If you and Trigvi Olsen went on a statewide speaking tour, I'd totally be a roadie there. I'd do your mic checks and I'd, you know, get you your guitar picks, whatever it is that a roadie does allegedly.
I was a roadie for a friend that had a band with his wife at the time, a little country band. They went regionally, mm-hmm. and you will get this reference. Not everybody does. I tell people, they tell, are you part of the band? I say, I'm the Reuben Kincaid. I just get in the back and say, these guys are good.
Partridge Family reference. Very good. Extra points there. We're just totally skewing to the youngsters, aren't we? No,
oh, really. Yeah, the demographic just went to 75.
Yeah, right. No kidding. And Aaron, you being involved in music, you like Jackson Browne. You appreciate the lyrics in the Loadout.
I don't remember them.
Oh my goodness! Oh,
great song.
Oh,
I like Jackson Browne. I mean, I never used to be a lyrics person. When I was younger, yeah. I was just listening to the drums and the bass, and that was basically it.
All right. Aaron has homework now to listen to the Loadout.
It's a great song. And actually Jackson Browne and Kenny Chesney do a mash of that. It's a great song.
And just by what you were saying about helping a friend, when you think of roadies, somewhat related to that is pit crews for these dirt tracks all over Wisconsin. I have an uncle, Leon Plank, who raced dirt track for many, many years across Western Wisconsin and across the country. And sometimes, you know, my dad and other buddies would help as part of, you know, the pit crew. We think of these very professional, you know, high level folks, you know, in Daytona and all that. And I'm taking nothing away from them, but it's the buddies, the men and the women who help each other out, whether they're in a band or they're a driver or what have you, that, you know, I think it's good that we call them out.
Yeah, no, you cannot be, I don't care whether you're, you know, this, whether you're a state or any elected official, but the higher up you go, the more important it is to have a good road crew, a good staff, whether it's the musicians we listen to, as you said, race crews, the men and women who are the name brand in front of the cameras, driving the cars, whatever it is, it's those people behind the scenes that make that person truly successful.
Oh my gosh. When I think back to my first race in 2006 and the people who, I mean, they were there either every weekend, they were at every parade or, you know, whatever it was for knocking on doors because they, you know, they were, again, they wanted you to succeed, whether it's a band, a driver, a campaign, what have you. And so if all of this helps anybody feel better about, you know, volunteering and helping out with something, just know anybody who does any kind of support staff, you know, who else fits in that category?
Tell me.
The radio producers.
Yeah.
Aren't they something?
They're fantastic. We have the best, Mr. Zomers. So, yeah.
I feel like Todd's like, what, or Aaron's like, wait, am I being set up? What's going on?
I don't really know.
What I'm waiting for, speaking of people that help out, I really want somebody, I want the door to open behind Pat right now and somebody like, housekeeping. Come in and clean the room. That'd be fantastic.
It's going to be good. Checkout time is coming pretty soon. Trust me. I also didn't want to spend all of this segment, reviewing some of the things that are going to get talked about ad nauseum, but yeah. I can't help but come back to the Trump indictment, at least to say again, as I said at the top of the show, yes, this is the third indictment, but this is the big one. This is the one about, quite literally undermining democracy and trying to steal an election. This is not something to be yawned at or roll your eyes over. At least certainly that's my way of looking at it. And I sense that the Todd Alba Show at 1 o'clock today will have a similar tact.
You are 100% correct, Pat. And are you able to join us today? Or are you going to be on the road today?
I will be joining you from I'll be checked out of the hotel, but I'll be in the hotel. I'll be a lobby lizard here at the hotel.
Whoa. Yeah. That's even better. Pat Kreitlow is a lobby lizard. That'll be right. Cool. No, you're absolutely right. I have not gotten through the entire indictment yet. I downloaded it. And yeah, Pat, I mean, as someone who was a former Republican up until 2011, to see this and to see the connection now, literally, not just with the January 6th committee, but now with the Department of Justice to Wisconsin U.S. Senator Ron Johnson and his role and trying to usurp and overturn the election. And now with Trump, this one is the one that really has disturbed me the most. I don't know that any of it was necessarily surprising, but to actually see this and read it, and Keith Olbermann, who I know for some people is a little over the top, but I thought last night in his podcast, he really nailed it when he said, you know what? Jack Smith has proven in this document, or at least we believe he has the setup here to say insurrection without saying insurrection, coup without saying, he legally finessed this. So anybody with a brain who reads this knows that's what he's saying, but he made it more palatable for a grand jury. And I think easier to get an indictment by putting it down there as a former judge I once was in front of, not as a defendant, but Judge Weissman once said of Tennessee, he said, put it down there where the chickens can get at it. And I think that's what Jack Smith did. And, I don't mean to make light of it, but it's very serious charges. But it affected me. I won't lie. It affected me when I read this yesterday because it is the most grievous in that we had a sitting president trying to usurp an election, things that we read about in books or see in movies or see from afar around the world, but to see it happen here at home, pretty disturbing.
Yeah. Again, this is not spin on an election. This is not First Amendment stuff. This is the actions that result from speaking about these things. This is not just skepticism. This is not just suspicion. It's really the absence of good faith activity by a candidate when you take that next step of trying to rig. I mean, again, I'm sure the word rig isn't in there either, but this was literally trying to rig an election. And if there are not consequences for this, I mean, Katie barred the door on what happens from here on in.
And irony has a funny way of working out. Trigvi Olson from the Lincoln Project, who joins you and I regularly on Wednesday, will do so today, but he will be doing so from Lithuania, from the Eastern European bloc, where he has family there. And talk about a guy who knows what authoritarianism is, because he's seen it up front. It's Trigvi Olson. He'll be joining us there and comparing what's happening here to what he's seen in Europe and places like Russia, where, of course, he is banned by Vladimir Putin himself. So sure, the guy knows something about it. And also coming up, Doug Moe, a great columnist, great writer from the Madison area here, Madison Magazine. He'll be joining us on hour two on the show this afternoon. But we kick things off with our most important guest, Pat Kreitlow, at 1 o'clock.
From the lobby, from the hotel lobby.
Lobby lizard, Pat Kreitlow.
Somewhere in downtown Milwaukee. All right. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you, Pat.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, everybody, for being here and for putting up with the gravelly voice. I hope for just one more day. We'll see you back here tomorrow, live from, thank goodness, Lake Wissota. Have a great day.